Town Hall and the American Broadcasting Company present America's Town Meeting of the Air.
Town meeting tonight from Town Hall, New York. Would a $100 a month pension for all retired persons provide real security? Here, the Honorable Maurice J. Tobin, N. Albert Linton, Robert R. Nathan, and Congressman Carl T. Curtis. Hear both sides and make up your own mind. Everybody listen.
Town meeting fans from coast to coast will be delighted to learn that once again the radio editors of the nation have voted America's Town Meeting the best educational program and placed it second among public service programs in Motion Picture Daily's 14th annual poll for fame. As some of you know, Town Meeting has received more than 46 national awards during its 14 and a half years on the air. It is also a good reason for all of us to extend hearty congratulations to Mr. Denny, Mrs. Elizabeth Coakley, Town Meeting's program director, and all the members of the Town Hall staff. Next week, we have a very special announcement to make to you about Town Meeting programs beginning January 3rd. So plan to be with us next Tuesday night to hear Jackie Robinson, star of the Brooklyn Dodgers, Harold Russell, Motion Picture Academy Award winner and head of AmVets, Betty Betts, young syndicated columnist for the Hearst Papers, and Betsy Barton, author of The Long Walk, discuss the question, can youth have faith in the future? And now to preside over our discussion, here is your moderator, the president of Town Hall, founder of America's Town Meeting, George V. Denny, Jr. Mr. Denny!
Good evening, neighbors. Tonight we want to talk to you about something that concerns you very deeply. How much money will you have to live on when you've retired, and the ways and means of securing this money between now and then? This has been one of man's great problems for centuries. A few people in every society are able to handle the problem individually, but in the vast majority of cases all over the world, families take care of their aged ones, or they must depend upon such charities as that particular society provides. Even now, throughout this country, the richest and most productive in the world, millions of aged people are being provided for by their families and charitable institutions. In recent years, the idea of pensions obtained through private insurance companies, private businesses, and government has grown widely, and no enlightened person today opposes the idea of pensions. The only disagreement arises out of how to secure them and the amounts and at what age they should begin. For the purpose of our discussion this evening, we're taking 65 as a desirable age for retirement, although, of course, this does not apply in all cases. It's estimated that there are some 11 million people, 65 or over, in this country, and it's been proposed by Secretary Tobin and many union leaders that $100 a month would be a desirable figure for all retired workers in order to provide real security. The next question to arise is how such an income can be secured, through individual contributions, through joint contributions by individual workers and the business enterprises for whom they work, or by the business enterprise alone, or by government, or some combination of all three. Then there's the third important question. Can all of us, during our working ages, roughly 20 to 64 inclusive, afford to provide such pensions for the rest of us when we're 65 or over? In other words, would a $100 a month pension for all retired persons provide real security, all things considered? We are very fortunate this evening in having four outstanding authorities to deal with this question. Secretary of Labor Maurice J. Tobin himself, and Robert R. Nathan, economist and attorney who uphold the affirmative. Representative Carl T. Curtis, Republican of Nebraska and member of the House Ways and Means Committee, and Mr. L. Albert Linton, president of the Provident Mutual Life Insurance Company of Philadelphia and member of the Advisory Council of the Social Security Board, who uphold the negative. We'll hear first from Secretary Tobin, twice mayor of Boston, formerly governor of Massachusetts, and now Secretary of Labor in President Truman's cabinet, the Honorable Maurice J. Tobin.
Mr. Denny and my colleagues on the program of Town Meeting of the Air, ladies and gentlemen, The real question before this town meeting is not whether retired persons need $100 a month in order to support themselves and their dependents at a decent standard of living. This is a simple matter of fact which can be verified by a visit to any corner grocery store on the statistics of family budget costs. We know that an elderly couple require $100 to $150 monthly in most cities to maintain even a very modest standard of living. The real issue here tonight is how we can most effectively meet this need. First, I believe we can all agree that the benefits provided by the present federal old age insurance law are grossly inadequate. The average old age benefit under this program is now $26 a month to a retired worker and only $41 per month to a retired worker and his wife. These benefits did not meet the needs of retired persons even in 1939 when the benefits were established. And since then, the cost of living has risen 70%. It is a tragic irony that those receiving old age assistance are now getting, on the average, almost twice as much in relief as retired workers get in earned benefits under the insurance program. That's the average of the whole of America. In California and Colorado, an aged couple can receive $150 a month on assistance with a need qualification. In Louisiana, over 80% of all aged persons are receiving relief payments of approximately $90 per couple. Unless we take steps now to put our payments to the aged on a sound social insurance basis, we are threatening the financial solvency of our states and localities. The gross inadequacy of the present insurance benefits has caused organized labor to negotiate directly with employers for pensions. Private pension plans have an important role in supplementing a public system, but it would be a serious error to think that these industry pensions can take the place of a comprehensive and basic system of federal old age insurance. These plans offer substantial protection only to workers who remain with the same company or industry until they reach the age of 65 and retire. If workers are laid off or change their jobs, or if their employer goes out of business, they are likely to lose their pension rights entirely under practically all private plans. The only fundamental approach to old age security problem is through an expanded and improved federal old age insurance program. I am for a major revision of the Federal Social Security Act. The benefits should be substantially liberalized so that they will come somewhere near providing adequate support for the great majority of the aged people today. I believe a pension of $100 for retired workers is a goal we should aim for. Benefits would vary in relation to previous earnings and family responsibilities. The House of Representatives has already passed a bill which has gone a long way in this direction. The Senate will consider the bill early next year, and I strongly hope that further improvements will be made. Finally, there is one aspect of this problem which has not been sufficiently emphasized. There is a tendency to assume that if benefits are made more adequate, all of the aged workers will leave their employment as soon as they qualify and will go on a pension. There is no basis for this belief. Over 3 million men and women, 65 years and over, are at present gainfully employed in the United States. Of all men over 65 years of age, almost 50% are now working. Moreover, many others would continue to work if suitable work were available for them. I have committed myself and the Department of Labor to do everything possible to promote job opportunities for these older workers. The solution of the problem for old age security depends upon three things: providing more job opportunities for older workers, providing an adequate income for those who retire, by improving the old age insurance program, and thereby abolishing welfare old age assistance, which is placing an unreasonable tax burden on the states and on the local communities.
Thank you, Secretary Tilden. Well, Mr. Linton, it's been a long time since you've appeared on town meeting, but I'm sure you remember your discussion with Mr. Frank Bain here in town hall on December 10th, 1936, just as our federal Social Security program was getting underway. Then as now, we were aware of your leadership in the insurance field and your special interest and qualifications to discuss this subject. For in addition to your position as president of the Provident Mutual Life Insurance Company of Philadelphia, you've served as a member of the advisory councils on the Social Security from 1938 to 1948. We're happy to welcome you back to town meeting, Mr. Albert Linton.
Secretary Tobin and I agree that there is a pension problem in this country and that something should be done about it. As I see it, the question is how and to what extent the problem should be met by government through taxation. Mr. Tobin is for an expanded and improved Social Security program. So am I. The annoying trouble with old age pensions is that they cost a lot of money. To provide a person age 65 with a pension of $100 a month for life, you need the equivalent of nearly $15,000 in cash at the time age 65 is reached. There is a limit to what we can safely and properly do in levying taxes. If the burden is too heavy, our economy will go backward. Taxes for pensions may take money that should fairly be used for the care and upbringing of children. The problem is acute because the tax gatherer already is taking so much of our money. War, man's greatest enemy, demands more than $25 billion for military expenditures, veterans' benefits, and interest on a huge war debt. Governmental expenses and foreign aid demand at least $15 billion. State and local governments take another $11 billion. Thus, before pensions enter the picture, government is already spending at least $51 billion, or about 23% of our national income. The tax load to pay such expenses reduces the standard of living for everybody. Many of the taxes are hidden. For example, an automobile costing $1,900 includes $400 to $450 of taxes. Taxes also do damage by drying up the sources of venture or risk capital. Without an adequate supply of such capital, we shall go backwards. Instead of creating more and more wealth to be shared, the amount of wealth per person will fail to increase or will decline. England is learning that lesson the hard way. The question, therefore, boils down to something like this. By how much should the living standards of the working population and their children be cut down so that the living standards of retired persons may be raised? Let's look at some of the figures. There are about 11 million persons in this country aged 65 or over, of whom about 3 million are now working. Mr. Tobin's proposal would produce old age benefits for retired workers averaging close to $100 a month. Under Social Security, the wife, if aged 65 or over, would receive 50% of that sum, making $150 per couple, $1,800 a year. Under the old age insurance system, very few persons would receive pensions of that size for many years to come. Eventually, however, these pensions would cost a huge sum, probably $20 billion or more a year. Today, there are about 8 persons aged 20 to 64 for each person aged 65 or over. 25 years hence, the estimate is only 5 persons aged 20 to 64 for each person over 65. We'd better be careful about promising larger pensions in the future than we are prepared to pay today. We are now collecting taxes to pay pensions. In 1950, the taxes to support old age assistance and to provide old age benefits under Social Security may come close to $4 billion. This may cause the total tax load to approach $55 billion if the budget is to be balanced. To obtain the money to pay now to all retired persons what Mr. Tobin would promise for the future would probably make it necessary to add $3 to $4 billion to the tax bill. But the budget with its approximately $55 billion in prospective expenditures is already billions in the red. Unless other expenses can be reduced, the new taxes coming in and being paid out as pensions would leave us as much in the red as we were before. On top of our present tax load, they might be enough to break the camel's back and bring on a depression. In that event, all, particularly the aged, would suffer. When we consider that our huge budget is several billions out of balance, that on the average the working force of the country is working the equivalent of 8 to 10 hours every week, 400 to 500 hours every year, merely to pay the taxes now being imposed, would be willing to work to make greater provision for old age than we are now making. Wouldn't it be wiser to see whether we can make better use of the $4 billion we are now collecting for pensions before increasing our tax burdens?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Linden. Our next speaker, Robert Nathan, is a consulting economist and attorney of Washington, D.C., who's written widely on the subject we're discussing tonight, and his studies have been the basis for wage demands of labor in the steel industry. He served during the war as chairman of the Planning Committee of the War Production Board, and later, after joint government service, as deputy director of the Office of War Mobilization and Reconversion. Mr. Robert Nathan is also a popular town meeting speaker. Mr. Nathan, welcome back to this platform.
Thank you, Mr. Denny. America's natural resources, machinery, and skilled manpower are so vast that we can certainly do away with poverty among all our people. It makes no sense whatsoever for so rich and resourceful a country as ours to fail so miserably in providing real security for its aged people. The individual cannot fully take care of himself in his old age. A few simple figures prove this. In the prosperous year of 1947, more than one out of every three families in the United States was unable to save anything. And most of this group had to dig into accumulated savings or had to borrow money to make both ends meet. And another third of our families saved less than $200 in that boom year. Would they be able to save up $15,000 to buy that annuity, which Mr. Linton mentioned in his talk? I ask, is this enough to provide old age security? Though thrifty and responsible, the American citizens cannot assure their own security because more than one out of every four American families earned less than $2,000 and half earned less than $3,000 in the boom year of 1948. The overwhelming majority of American citizens are unable to maintain modest standards of living and still provide for their old age and other hazards. Providing security for our senior citizens does not mean the end of freedom and security. In the late 30s, we were warned again and again that millions of people working on government work projects would never again accept employment in private industries. And yet, when job opportunities became available during the war, these honest and conscientious Americans moved into private employment gladly and speedily. I say that security for Americans will not destroy their initiative and make them into public charges. America can readily afford to provide a $100 a month pension for retired workers. Such a system will yield a steady income for the retired workers' families roughly equal to about one-third of the average family income in America today. Now, those who are retired today somehow or other do eke out an existence. Many live on public assistance, and they suffer the degradation associated with accepting relief. Others live on their children or other relatives, and that creates further hardship. Some few, and they are few indeed, have been able to save enough to take care of themselves. Now, an assured pension will increase consumption by the older people somewhat, but more importantly, this will substitute certainty for uncertainty and dignity for pauperism. Such a pension system will be healthful and helpful to our economy. Millions of aged people will have an assured means of buying goods and services, which this country can and does produce in such vast quantities. We must realize, and we must never forget it, that a prosperous America requires not only a productive America, but also consumption of what we produce. Businessmen don't employ people merely because they like to have them on their payrolls. They employ and they produce in order to sell their goods. And we in America must have a high level of consumption if we're going to have high levels of production. And a fully employed economy, a prosperous economy, will find this pension system much less costly than a depressed and an unemployed economy. Pensions can be a factor in maintaining prosperity. Now, no one likes high taxes. Actually, however, taxes will have to be increased only moderately to finance such pensions. We mustn't forget that payments under the Old Age Assistance Program will be greatly reduced. We must remember that assessments now placed on many private plans will be diverted to this federal pension plan. And we must also remember that not all people over 65 will or should retire. I believe that the cost of such a system is manageable. In essence, what we are proposing is a system taxing the workers and the corporations of America some modest proportion of their total revenue, so as to give to those who have given so much to this country, some assurance of real security in their declining years. A nation with a $250 billion national product, a nation whose corporations earned $23 billion after taxes in 1948, a nation whose gainful labor force totals over 60 million people, cannot afford to fail to provide $7 billion a year at current requirements to guarantee a reasonable minimum standard of living for those 4 million workers who have retired and for their wives. Thank you.
I can see that this audience is ready with a lot of questions, Mr. Nathan, but we'll hear next from the gentleman from Nebraska, who also has some questions to raise, as he's specialized in our Social Security system. He entered Congress in 1938 at the age of 33 and is now a ranking Republican member of the House Ways and Means Committee, which originates all of the nation's tax and Social Security legislation. We are very happy to present for the first time to this town meeting microphone Congressman Carl T. Curtis of Nebraska.
The question, does a $100 a month pension for all retired persons provide real security, is one of considerable interest. There must be a program for our aged people. We must not lose sight of the fact, however, that whatever is paid to them is paid by their friends, their relatives, their neighbors, by their children, and by their grandchildren. It must be taken from the standard of living of all of these people. To picture the payment as easy, without sacrifice or hardship, is a snare and a delusion. Mr. Tobin submits a proposal for an old age insurance with a goal of $100 a month for all retired workers. Mr. Tobin would do this by liberalizing and expanding our old age insurance program. It is a promise of a future benefit for but a segment of our population. It is a promise to the worker who may now be 30, 40, or 50 years of age, a retirement benefit of $100 a month. It does not take care of this generation of old people. The older citizen today who is out of the labor market and who cannot work or who has been too old to work for several years cannot qualify under an insurance program. In addition to failing to do justice to this generation of needy old people, Mr. Tobin's proposal would commit future generations of taxpayers to the payment of untold billions of benefits, not only 50 years, 100 years from now, but so long as the government stands. A conservative cost of Mr. Tobin's proposal when it would mature would be $20 billion a year. We would bind our children and our grandchildren by contract to pay $20 billion for old age insurance each year. Our children would have nothing to say about it. It is an insurance contract that it would either have to be paid or repudiated. Again, let me say that when Mr. Tobin proposes to build on our existing old age insurance program, he is making grandiose promises for the future, but not taking care of this generation of old men and women who have toiled all through the years. How can the old person, now unable to qualify for work, qualify in an insurance program? I oppose Mr. Tobin's proposal because it would place an unbearable future burden on our children and because it does not cure the evils of our present unworkable old age and survivors insurance and old age assistance program. I submit that in any given year, those of us who are able to produce should take care of those who are unable to produce for themselves in that year, that we should meet the need and pay for it in that year, so that when the year ends, the need has been met, the bill has been paid, there is nothing promised and nothing owed. Then we leave to future generations of taxpayers the right to determine for themselves how much they would pay for these social programs. The administration of Franklin Roosevelt never spent for all purposes of government in any year, including PWA, WPA, agriculture, national defense, and all the rest,
as much as $11 billion a year in any year up until the armament program of 1941.
The Tobin old age insurance proposal would require our children, 40 years from now, to pay almost twice that sum each year for old age insurance alone. There is no security in bankruptcy. The present value of every farm in America, together with the farm equipment and livestock, is just a little more than the yearly cost of the Tobin proposal when it matures some years from now. Let us see how the Tobin proposal would work. Let us take the case of the corporation official whose salary has been something over $250 a month and who retires in 1949. His old age insurance benefit would be raised by Mr. Tobin to $100 a month. This corporation official has only paid in his entire lifetime the total sum of $390, or less than what he would draw out in 4 months. He would draw this $100 per month for the balance of his life, which is estimated at 12 years, at the expense of the rank and file of the American people. At the same time, Mr. Tobin's proposal offers nothing for the needed aged person who has been unable to work for the last 10 years. The Tobin proposal means bigger deficits, higher taxes, higher living costs, and less security for this generation of aged, needy people and for all of us.
Thank you, Congressman Curtis. Well, Secretary Tobin, he's raised a lot of questions for you there. I think this is a good time for us to get up here and huddle around the microphone and for you to talk back. Mr. Secretary?
I am wondering whose proposal Congressman Curtis is talking about. I can't recognize my own baby. But I think I recognize in his proposal one in which there would be no direct levy of taxes. So I'm interested in whether or not he's interested in a modified Townsend plan and how much he would propose to pay to the retired worker.
Mr. Curtis, in answer to Mr. Tobin, I have submitted no plan. I am not offering none. I have none to defend. He has offered to pay each old person in the country $100 a month. That would cost $20 billion a year by the most conservative estimate. Where would you get the money, Mr. Tobin?
I would just say this to you. I have not offered $100 to every person in the country. We have carefully discussed that. Under no circumstances would we grant a pension that would be greater than the amount of money that a person had earned during their working lifetime. The proposal was that we pay 60% of a worker's earnings up to $100. And then on the upper levels, beyond the $100, that would be a $60 minimum basis. Now, how would I raise the money? On the same method that is used in old age and survivor's insurance at the present time, by a joint payment, by management, and by labor. And in the event that the costs go up higher at a later date, there is the possibility of the participation of the federal government in the program, as was recommended by President Clinton's program, and he signed the, I think he testified at a later date, that he differed with the recommendations of the Social Security Advisory Committee, but he did sign the original report with that recommendation.
Well, Mr. Tobin very definitely said he thought that the proposed Social Security program should be greatly increased. And if I understand his figures, it would certainly be double the average payments which are to be provided by this new bill passed by the House. Now, the ultimate cost of that bill is estimated by the government's actuary is roughly $12 billion in 50 years from now. I can't see how twice that amount, which would be certainly well over $20 billion. I did not sign the $20 billion. I signed the one which is proposed by the Advisory Council, which is much closer to reasonable figures.
Mr. Secretary?
The difference in the proposal that I have made and the proposal that was made by the President Linton's committee, under no circumstances would ever be 100% increase. I think that it would be reasonable to say that a 30% increase would be about as much as would be involved.
Thank you. Mr. Nathan, what are you doing back in the corner?
Well, I have a couple of comments on these figures, Mr. Denny, I'd like to make. In the first place, I think Mr. Linton's assumption that a very substantial portion of the people over 65 who are working will retire should not and does not bear any real basis. I believe that we should try to set up a system which doesn't destroy the incentive for people to continue to work if they want to work. Let's not force them into retirement. On the other hand, let's not force them into pauperism to keep them working. Give them a choice. Yeah, one other point briefly. On this cost thing, Mr. Linton and especially Congressman Curtis talked about the cost 40 years from now. Let me say that if we had a pension system now, which was proposed 40 years ago, and they talked then about the cost when our national income was about $25 or $30 billion, it would look crazy. I have confidence that this country is going to grow and develop and prosper, and the national income 40 years from now isn't going to be where it is today, and I think the cost burden is not going to be so great that we have to let our old people wander and suffer as they will.
Congressman Curtis, now under the bill that passed the House of Representatives, the $250 a month man would get a primary benefit of about $64 to $67 a month if he'd been working for 13 years. Mr. Tobin's proposal, as I understand it, would give that man 60% of his average wage, which would be $150 a month. Now, how is he going to do that without increasing the cost only 30%? The program that the House of Representatives has already passed is going to cost about $12 billion when it matures. And Mr. Tobin would practically double that.
Which one of you want to take that on?
Well, may I, Mr. Denny, just say this. Now, what Mr. Tobin has not said that he would give everybody 60% of his earnings, because, of course, if there were no upper limit, you could pension a man who made $100,000 a year with $60,000 a year. That's not the idea of the Federal Old Age Insurance Program. The idea of that program is to attempt to provide a $100 pension for individuals, but in no case to give them more for not working than they got when they were working, and that's why he'd limit it to 60%. The attempt here, it seems to me, is to try to provide some kind of a mechanism, some kind of a system, Congressman Curtis, to provide a degree of security which will not bankrupt this country, and I'm sure that the program proposed will not, and at the same time, give a degree of security that our resources permit.
Now, Congressman Curtis, I didn't say 60% of his earnings. I said 60% of $250, which would be a $150 a month pension, and that's quite an increase. Do you deny, Mr. Nathan, that this program, when it matures, would cost $20 billion? I asked Mr. Nathan.
Well, let Mr. Nathan handle it, please.
That depends very substantially, Congressman Curtis, on what happens in terms of the number of the people that continue to be employed. It depends very substantially on the length of longevity of life, which I think is going to increase. It depends substantially on what happens in terms of the survivors and a number of other factors. I haven't any doubt, Congressman Curtis, but that 40 years from now, we in America will probably be spending around that amount for the security of our old people. But I also think 40 years from now, Congressman Curtis, if we keep growing as we did in the past, even without higher prices, our national income will not be $200 billion, but it will probably be somewhere around $500 or $600 billion. That's the way we've grown in the past. That's the way we'll pay for it.
All right. You've admitted it would cost $20 billion. How are you going to raise the $20 billion? What kind of tax?
Mr. Tobin, Secretary.
I would like to get this situation down to a rational thinking. The proposal has been made by Congressman Curtis that this would cost $11 million.
Billion.
$11 billion. He has suggested that if a man received $250 a month, that 60% of that would be the pension that would be awarded him. Well, that must be Congressman Curtis's own plan, because it certainly is not mine. I believe that after $100 was reached, that we should follow along the lines that has been established under the Social Security plan that has been in effect since 1939. But I'd like to read to this audience the amounts of old age pensions that we have at the present time. I wonder how many people realize that we spend this year, next year, there will be raised $2.4 billion for old age and survivors insurance. That we have 140,000 civil servants on pension, and if President Lincoln was proper in his estimate that there would be one dependent for each retired person under the plan, then it's right to assume that each retired government worker now has one, and that amounts to $500 million. On railroad retirement, there are 230,000 beyond the OASI, Old Age and Survivors Insurance. And they, it's right to assume, if President Lincoln had the right, that they have at least one dependent each of 230,000 more. In addition to that, there are state and local employees, totaling 174,000, doubling at 348,000. 1,088,000 people are today dependent upon pensions that are government in one form or another, which will greatly reduce the load that he has described. Then, if despite we take that million off of the roll, in addition to that, he is assuming that every one of the 11 million people in the country are going to insist upon collecting a pension, when I'm inclined to believe that millions of American workers, if given an opportunity to do jobs that they're capable of doing at their age, that they're going to continue to produce in an expanding American economy rather than to live on old age assistance. And I am convinced that the program and the proposal would not cost now anywhere near $7 billion. And here's a list showing that we're spending $6 billion at the present time for various types of old age insurance under government office.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Mr. Linton, please.
Well, Mr. Nathan did definitely suggest that $7 billion be put aside for old age pensions today. About how many people do you think would share that sum, and what would be the average, do you think, per person?
Mr. Nathan?
Mr. Linton, just very briefly, I think that we have, if I could summarize this, we have about 11 million old people today over 65, of whom about 3 million actually continue to work. They have somewhere between 1.5 million and 2 million people over 65 who are dependent on them, which means about 4.5 or 5 million. That leaves us about 6 million or so that are retired in the old age category. I'd say about 4 million of them are former workers, and about 2 or 2.5 million are dependents, the housewives, the widows, and so forth. I would guess that today would be somewhere between 5 and 6 million people under the pension system who would benefit, and those 5 or 6 million would probably, the primary beneficiary, that is the one who retired, might average around 100 or 100 and a quarter a month, probably around 100 a month, and the spouse would probably average about 50% more. I'd say the total would be 6 or 7. But it wouldn't be much additional cost because, as Secretary Tobin pointed out, we're not collecting $2.5 billion under the taxes for Social Security. We're spending $1.5 billion every year for old age assistance, and these other retirement programs run up to about $1.5 billion or two. And then on top of that, these corporations are now assessing for these new private pension systems, which would move over into ours. So the net additional cost, Mr. Nutton, I think, would be very small.
Thank you, gentlemen. You're generating an awful lot of heat and light and billions, but there are a lot of questions out there in the audience, so let's pause now briefly for station identification.
Each week, Town Hall publishes a convenient pocket-sized pamphlet, the Town Meeting Bulletin, which contains the complete text in... The subscription rate for this bulletin is $4.50 a year. Now, if you'd like to receive the Town Meeting Bulletin each week, send your subscription to Town Hall, New York 18, New York. Or why not send a gift subscription as a Christmas present to some of your friends? If you send your gift subscription direct to Mr. Denny, he will write a personal letter to the person or persons you designate saying that the bulletin is coming as a Christmas gift from you. Now, this applies only to gift subscriptions on a yearly basis. Send your remittance and the name and address of the person you wish to receive the bulletin direct to Mr. Denny, Town Hall, New York 18, New York. Copies of tonight's broadcast may be secured by enclosing 10 cents and sending your request to the same address. No matter what your age, you will want to be at your radio dial next week, December 27th, when Jackie Robinson, the famous second baseman of the Brooklyn Dodgers, Harold Russell, Motion Picture Academy Award winner and head of AmVets, Betty Betts, the young syndicated columnist for the Hearst Papers, and Betsy Barton, author of The Long Walk, discuss the question, Can Youth Have Faith in the Future? Now, if you'd like to attend the broadcast, address your request for tickets to Town Meeting Ticket Department, Town Hall, New York. And now our Town Hall audience is ready with questions, and so for our question period, we return you to Mr. Denny.
Eureka Springs, Arkansas, addressing this question to Mr. Tobin, in view of the fact that money paid pension recipients goes mainly for commodity purchases, why not let an equitable sales tax bear this burden?
Secretary Tobin?
I believe in a good, sound insurance system under which both management and labor make their proportionate contribution. I further believe that if the day arrives that it is necessary, that the government should participate, because if the program goes through in the form that has been recommended by the Advisory Council, of which Mr. Linton is a member, we will be able to eliminate a great many public payments that are now made at the present time. The workers of America have indicated a ready willingness to pay this tax. I think that there might be a resentment on the part of the general public against a sales tax. So when you find all sides willing to pay a reasonable tax, I don't see why we should turn to any other type of taxation.
Thank you, Secretary Tobin. The young man down here in the floor.
I'm Bruce Dunn from Forest Hills, New York. I'd like to address my question to Mr. Nathan. Is it not true that too much consumption as well as high taxes cause depression and thereby harm the old more than helping them?
Would you mind repeating that again? I'm sorry.
Is it not true that too much consumption as well as high taxes cause depression and thereby harm the old more than helping them?
Well, in my judgment, seldom causes depression. Usually too high total expenditures, and usually in prosperity we get excessive investment rather than excessive consumption expenditures. What causes depressions, or what transpires during depressions, is that we don't have enough consumption. We don't have enough buying power among the masses of the people to buy the goods and services we can produce. What happened in this country in 1932? We had the productive facilities we had in 29. We had the workers. We had the raw materials. We didn't have the buying power to take the goods off the market that the American people wanted. And I believe that we will lend a great deal of stability, a great deal of stability to our levels of consumption, which will help us to maintain prosperity by being sure that this segment of our population has the possibility of a reasonably decent standard of living.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan.
Mr. Curtis. I'm Daniel Peel from New York. Are you, Congressman Curtis, opposed to the principle of an old age pension, or simply to the problem of the cost?
I am opposed to any system that fixes benefits now, the amount of benefits now, binding upon future generations. The insurance system will not work. It is estimated by the Social Security Board that there will be 22 million people over 65 by 1980. If we follow Mr. Tobin and guarantee him to give them $100 a month, it'll cost $27 billion. We cannot commit our children to that payment in 1980 and give them a land of freedom and choice for themselves.
Thank you, Congressman Curtis. Do you want to speak to that, Mr. Tobin?
I'm amazed at Congressman Curtis's mathematics. It has now gone up to $27 billion. Just in a very short period of time. Now, I can remember back in 1935 when the Social Security law was written, the very statements Congressman Curtis is making now were the statements that were made by the Republican minority of the committee when the Social Security law was written. They predicted to the American people that there would be economic collapse, and instead of that, our social program has built a stronger economy in the United States than we have ever known before. It is a psychology of fear. Now, I'd like to make this statement, and it's going to be brief. When I was born, my expectancy of life was 48 years of age. I am 48 today.
Mike, a baby born today has a right to have an expectancy of 67 years of life. I will probably live to be 78. We're living in an entirely different world. And I think the best argument that has been made up to now for our side of the case has been made by Congressman Curtis and Mr. Linton. Yes, we will reach a period in America when there will be but one worker. There'll be five workers to every person over the age of 65. Now, what has happened? In our Father's Day, a man with his ordinary expectancy of life and with a slower process of industry, they could carry through to the end of their days. But with the modern speed up and with Bob, what do you call that?
Technology.
Belt line of the modern day, an older man can't keep pace. And I say that we have to take into consideration this extended span of life beyond the extended span of a working life. And it is the duty of our government to build for a sound future economy. And whenever we have a sound insurance policy in which workers and management participate jointly and, if necessary, with the help of government, we're sustaining and doing only justice by the older workers in the United States who are unable any longer to get gainful employment.
I do not preach a doctrine of fear. I submit to the people here and to the millions listening over the air to take out their pencils and figure the cost. There are over 11 million old people now. How much would it take to pay them $100 a month if you reach them all? By 19... Just a minute, Mr. Tobin. By 1980, there will be 22 million people over 65. Take your papers and pencil and figure out what it would cost to pay them $100 a month. My figures are not wrong. They are correct.
I want to get some questions from the audience.
All right. Nathan. I just want to take one second. I happen to be quoting from a report that I think Congressman Curtis also quotes from, an actuarial analysis by the Social Security Board, which shows that in 1980, if you have the continued present mortality rates, you'll have 17.9, not 23 million people over 65. If you have the most favorable mortality, it will be 22.8. But in the same report, I just want to tell you that under the most favorable of the 22.8 or 23 million people over 65, even the Social Security Board estimates, the same source he quotes, shows there'll only be 11.5 million beneficiaries.
Thank you.
Mr. Denny, may I ask Mr. Linton a question? He has been neglected, and I think a phase of this matter has been neglected. Here is my question. Many corporations will not employ people over 40 years of age, regardless of ability. Do you not think that if they would employ such people, regardless of age, the problem would largely solve itself?
That's a very interesting question, and it shows the reason why we should have a sound Social Security system, because people, when they then take a job at age 45, have some pension credits already accrued, and therefore there's not the same hesitation on the part of the corporation to take them if they have a pension based on their previous working life. I'm all for a sound Social Security system. There's been a lot of wishful thinking here this evening and not enough, I think, feet on the ground as to what we can really do. But I'm in favor of a system which will give a man some credit so that when he comes to 45 and a company wants to hire him, he'll have something to go on.
Thank you. Gentlemen under the balcony.
Mr. Nathan, does a plan submitted by Edward Bellamy in equality eliminate all hardships?
Oh, dear. Well, no, that's out of another book. You're supposed to know the book. I'll take the lady right next to you. Pass the lady right next to you. Yes. Question for Mr. Linton.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's for Congressman Curtis.
Congressman Curtis? Oh, yes. Congressman Curtis. Beg your pardon. Yes.
Has not Sweden operated successfully for years a system of adequate care for its old people supported by the government? If Sweden can do this, why can't the United States of America do it?
Mr. Curtis, hasn't Sweden an adequate system, and if so, why can't we do it?
I would not want to go into the Swedish plan. I am not qualified to answer that.
Mr. Linton can comment on it. Mr. Lindman wants to.
Oh, just a second. If you would see the size of the Swedish benefits in the terms of what we've been talking tonight, you couldn't find them with a microscope.
All right, the gentleman over the other side.
This is to Mr. Linton. What do you propose as an adequate plan for the care of these displaced persons?
What displaced persons? We're not talking about displaced persons.
As far as displaced persons because of age and industry.
Well, you mean the people over 65?
Yes.
All right.
Well, I feel the benefits that are proposed by H.R. 6000, the bill was passed by the House, 333-14, has some reasonable figures in it that we can look forward to and feel we can carry as a nation. In other words, I think that's the answer.
All right, thank you. The gentleman in the balcony. Yes?
Jerry Hurwitz, presently of the University of Kentucky, Lexington, Kentucky. My question is addressed to Secretary Tobin. Wouldn't it be necessary to have a new pension that can fluctuate with the price index so as to avoid the era of 1939?
My gracious, that's making it more complicated. A flexible pension.
Well, that is approximately what was done in the writing of the bill that was passed by the House. And I would say that in view of the fact that in 1939, we still had about 8 million people unemployed in the nation, that the sights of everyone were pretty low. And the problem of old age had not become as acute as it is at the present time because there has been a substantial increase in the number. And I would rather see, well, to begin with, the best answer to it is that we have increased productivity every year, and it averages out to the point where about every 30 years we double the productivity of the nation, and therefore we should double the living standards of the people. And I'm confident that we do not need to gear it to the cost of living, but if the cost of living goes up, wages will go up in turn, and there should be enough money in the fund as a result of the increased wages to give them higher pay and benefits.
Thank you. The lady over here.
This is addressed to Mr. Curtis. I would like to know why, if the government can take the taxpayers' money and send it to other countries to take care of them and provide security, why can't it do the same thing for its own retired workers?
Congressman Curtis?
I don't know as to the relevancy of the question. Personally, I feel that the spending of billions abroad has been overdone. I have opposed it. Mr. Tobin's administration has sponsored it. That is no justification for proposing a proposal that would cost so much. You can't give the people anything that you don't first take away from them. There's only three ways to pay a pension. Tax the people and take it away from them. Sell them bonds and add to the national debt. Or printing press money. The people pay the pensions. The government can't give you anything.
Thank you. Now, while our speakers prepare their summaries of tonight's discussion, here's a special message of interest to each of you.
While our speakers are getting ready for the summaries of tonight's question, let us remind you that this is one of the three spots available on town meeting for local sponsors to use this nationally famous program as an advertising medium in your city. America's Town Meeting is what is known as a cooperatively sponsored program and is supported largely by 60 leading business institutions who are able to advertise their own institutions and at the same time help us to reach more people with these free and open discussions of vital problems of the day. Through this cooperative plan, newspapers, banks, building and loan associations, department stores, automobile dealers, and other local business institutions are able to be host to town meeting in their communities. The manager of the ABC station to which you are listening will be glad to tell you more about our plan of cooperative sponsorship. If you're a businessman and want to reach this influential town meeting audience with your message, won't you call him the first thing tomorrow morning? And now for the summaries of our discussion, we return you to Mr. Denny.
We hear first from Congressman Curtis. The fact remains a proposal to pay every retired person $100 a month
would be very costly. Mr. Tobin disputes how much it would cost. The people of America know their arithmetic. They can figure it. This program comes to a close without Mr. Tobin telling how he would raise the $20 billion a year when his program would mature.
Thank you, Congressman Curtis. Mr. Nathan?
Our older people must not be left to depend on handouts. History has proved that they cannot save enough to be independent when their working days are over. The only real security can come through a federal pension for all earners and workers. The cost of replacing the present catch-as-catch-can or the relief line methods will be moderate. The increased cost will be moderate and certainly within the financial means of this great country. I'm sure the workers of America will not fail to support their elders.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan. Now, Mr. Linton.
One of the great problems which has been pointed out tonight is the old age assistance program, which is paying free pensions to such large amounts. I think this is going to force a review of our whole pension program, because unless the old age insurance program is adjusted to do something for the present group of retired aged persons, it may be fatally undermined. To make such an adjustment will require us to revise much of our previous thinking on the subject. The problem is complex. It's not an easy one, but it deserves the very best thought that we can bring to bear upon it.
Thank you, Mr. Linton. And now a final word from Secretary Tobin.
We should have in mind that under old age assistance, which is charity, that payments are far greater than payments under old age and survivor's insurance. $26 for a single man, $41 for man and wife under the insurance system, and with states like California and Colorado paying straight welfare for a couple, $140. Private industry pensions do not give to workers security. They must stay with the same private company in most cases until they reach the age of 65. Then there is the danger of bankruptcy, the desire to change jobs, and the like. So therefore, I say old age and survivor's insurance is the basic system that should be used for the protection of the America's older workers.
Thank you, Secretary Tobin, Mr. Nathan, Mr. Linton, and Congressman Curtis. Remember, you can get a copy of tonight's program by sending 10 cents to Town Hall, New York, 18 New York, with a request for the town meeting bulletin of this week. This week, we discussed the problem of old age. Next week, we'll turn to the problem of youth. Our topic will be, can youth have faith in the future? Our young people's speakers will be Jackie Robinson, second baseman of the Brooklyn Dodgers, Betty Betts, teenage columnist of the Teen Set, Betsy Barton, author of The Long Walk, and Harold Russell, national commander of AmVets and winner of 2 Academy Awards for his performance in The Best Years of Our Lives. And we have a very important announcement to make to you next week about town meeting after January 3rd. So plan to be with us next week and every week at the sound of the crier's bell.
Town meeting next week! Town meeting next week! Can youth have faith in the future? Town meeting next week! Everybody listen!
From New York City, Town Hall and the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations have presented America's Town Meeting of the Air, the nation's most popular radio forum. Your producer is Richard Ritter. Your town crier is John Griggs. This is Charles Wood speaking. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.